Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have you here for another episode of the show. Now, my guest today is Morgan Hammond, and he has an interesting background. Morgan is a CPA and he's the founder of HDA Accounting Group. And he works with over 500 dental practices, so he knows intimately what works, what doesn't work. He knows the numbers to focus on and what really drives profit. But I think what makes Morgan's insights really important and really interesting is his background as a fighter pilot in the US Navy. Morgan served as a fighter pilot in the US Navy for about 11 years. He flew missions in and out of Iraq. He was on aircraft carriers landing at night and at sea. And what I really appreciated about Morgan's conversation today was the thinking he's taken from being a fighter pilot and applied it to business, and how he helps his clients think that way as well. In particular, we spoke about the importance of situational awareness, or SA, and we spoke about the relevance of that obviously in his flight work, where he was needing to survey the environment all the time, but equally how it's important to us as business owners as we navigate changing times, whether it's the COVID situation or whether it's dealing with, you know, changing times, economic conditions, and so on. It's about how to cultivate that situational awareness, and really also how to be mindful of risk in that process as well. How to identify risk, how to mitigate risk, and indeed what risks are worth taking and which ones are not. So this conversation is a conversation with lots of facets to it. Yes, we do look at some nitty-gritty numbers. We look at where the opportunities to drive profit are, and that's with, you know, Morgan's CPA hat on. But we also talk about the skills required to operate a successful enterprise, and that's where we talk about the lessons he's learned as a fighter pilot. So there's a ton of really useful information in this podcast, and I know that there's something in this for everyone. So please do have a pen and paper handy. There's a lot in here. And I hope you enjoy this podcast as much as I enjoyed having the conversation with Morgan. If you want to find out more about Morgan and the work he does with dentists, head across to hdagroupdental.com and you can find out more about his accounting skills and all the resources he's got on that website, which are plentiful. But for now, let's get into our conversation with Morgan Hammond. Here he is. Morgan Hammond, thank you so much for taking the time to come and join us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are things all the way in Denver today?
Things are good. I appreciate being here. Thank you for having me.
Look, it's an absolute pleasure. And I was reading your LinkedIn profile with quite a degree of interest. It's an unusual background in the sense that you did some undergraduate training in science and in business administration, and then spent a career as a naval aviator flying fighter jets and working on land craft and all the rest of it. Before we kind of get into your role these days as an accountant and all the things you do to support the dental world, and I know you've got a lot of expertise in that, I think I'd really like to explore a little bit about your military background, because I think there's some great parallels around the military, the work that you've done, and of course, you know, how that translates across to business. And I'm curious to ask a little bit about what drew you to being a fighter pilot in the first place, and a bit about your background, some of the things you were able to see and do.
No, definitely. So my family, like CPA is, I guess you consider our family trade. Like my dad's a CPA, my brother's CPA, my cousins are CPAs. And I was the rebel and went to university and said, I never want to be an accountant. I want to be a fighter pilot. So the Navy paid for my university. And I did get a degree, a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration. And then the day I graduated college, I was commissioned as an officer in the Navy and then off to flight school. And so I flew for the Navy for 11 years. I flew F-18s. And incidentally, as we were talking just before the show, Australia flies a lot of F-18s as well. And once I went through training and did an operational tour, I was a West Coast guy based in California and deployed to the Persian Gulf and Iraq. And then I was an instructor pilot in California. And I did that for 4 years on the F-18. And all the international, I guess, countries that fly F-18s would have a exchange pilot at our squadron. Mm-hmm. And so two of my best buddies in the world are Australian Air Force guys, because they were on exchange. And to this day, I'm in close contact with Kirby and Perth. He lives in Perth now. Yeah. So yeah, we got to be really close. So I've got some Aussie buddies from my US military experience, which is a little different. But after 11 years, my wife and I were ready, for a little bit of a change, a little more predictable life. So I really enjoyed my service and then transitioned into the civilian world. Went back to school, got a master's degree in accounting, and then sat for the CPA exam, which, just like in Australia, or if you have any UK listeners who are chartered accountants, that's a pretty big undertaking in itself. The difference was I was the old guy rather than the 20-somethings going through that painful process. But and then joined the family fold. My dad and I founded HD Accounting Group in 2009. We were both in a position where, we were wanting to do something new. That coincided in America. Your US listeners will remember well, that was the Great Recession in America. So it was kind of some tough times, but we started a business, and our vision was to have a business-oriented accounting firm. And so that's how we got going. How we got into dental is a bit of a different story, but I want to make sure I answer your question on the military background and how that translates to what I do now, because it's definitely aviation and accounting. You think about that, those streams don't really cross. But in terms of business ownership, running a company, being the business leader, I do credit much of my success to that Navy background. Mm-hmm. And I think there's two, well, more than two, but a couple things I'll mention from that Navy background that are applicable to every business owner, whether it's a dentist owns their practice, accountant owns their firm. And that is, in the Navy, the most valuable thing the Navy taught me was that when you're learning to fly jet aircraft, it's single seat. And not all planes, jets the Navy flies are single seats, but a lot of them are. And so they train everybody like it's just you in the cockpit. Okay. So you are trained to have a lot of self-introspection. If you're having a bad day, it's not the weather's fault. It's not the plane's fault. It's not the controller's fault. It's you. Yeah. And you need to be very quick to self-diagnose and fix your program if you're the problem. And so that runs counter to what a lot of people think about fighter pilots, like big attitudes. And you certainly have to have a pretty high level of self-confidence. But in the Hornet community that I was in, you're conditioned to be very hard on yourself. Yeah. And if something's broken, don't make excuses, just fix it. And that, I tell you, if you do that in business and you kind of take the ego and put it aside and you just diagnose, hey, this is wrong in my business, I just need to take care of it and fix it so that we're better. That is a huge part of my success, I think. I think it's very applicable.
That's really interesting. And one of the things I would like to ask you about, as you would have been flying and doing all the things you do, is to have great situational awareness. You've got to know where you are and what's around you and all the things going on. I'm wondering, firstly, how you learned to become situationally aware.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's probably a big conversation. You could probably talk for days just on that. But equally, how, again, that translates to business, because one of the things that I think is important, we're recording this in 2021, COVID's still here in various levels and various places and so on. And what I'm trying to give our listeners is a sense of how to read the landscape. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could just speak to that.
Yeah, situational awareness was massive. And we called it in the Navy, it was SA. And we talked about it every flight. You got to have a high SA. In fact, through flight school, that's a graded item on every flight evolution. You get graded on your SA, your situational awareness. In business, I think it's different, obviously. And it's a really good question. As I kind of lean into my new profession as an accountant, being situationally aware, I'll tend to gravitate towards what we do. Like every month we prepare our practice profitability analysis, mm-hmm. which is a full color dashboard style report that just kind of mm-hmm. serves up the financial data you need to very quickly feel in tune with your numbers mm-hmm. and have an idea how your practice is performing. So I'll tend to, as you ask this question, I consider that's where I tend to go. Like, well, let's look at the numbers. Let's have awareness. Is my practice at a level where the profitability is acceptable? And if not, why not? And of the finite time that we all have to manage our businesses, where do I want to focus that finite time so it makes a difference? Mm. As an accountant, I guess that's how I would want to have the situational awareness about how my business, but that's numbers and that's money. I think the other thing as business leaders is just like an accounting practice, a dental practice, it's not happening if we don't have our people.
Yeah.
Not employees. Yeah. And you just have to be you have to listen and pay attention. And also, I think, be very cognizant if you're the owner, business leader, you're under the microscope like all day, every day. They're constantly watching you. They're going to pick up on your moods, your mannerisms. It's always showtime for the owner. And I think that when I see practices struggling, a lot of times turnover can be causing those problems. And I think that managing people and running a business, it's a totally separate skill set from being a clinician. And so I think maintaining situational awareness for the benefit of your business, it's not always dollars. You got to pay attention to the people and the procedures and the processes too. Make sure things are working like they should.
I think that's a really important point, because you've said that you're in a single seat aircraft and you've mm-hmm. had to develop this high degree of introspection and reflection and being able to be situationally aware, but you're also getting inputs from various sources. You've got a whole, if you're not on a ship, you've got a ground crew there to support you. If you're on the carrier, obviously you've got a crew there to support you as well, plus no doubt control mm-hmm. towers and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. And even though that sounds like being a fighter pilot is a very solo pursuit, as you said, in a sense, mm-hmm. but it's also a team pursuit and being able to take that input. I wanted to ask you how you learned, and I realize this is kind of accounting related, but not, but I'm going to bring it back to this in a second, because I think I want to get to your core business, but I think the story is too fascinating to let pass up. How did you go about taking those inputs and assimilating that information quite literally and metaphorically on the fly? Yeah.
That itself is a separate skill, because you're right. It is. You're in the cockpit by yourself, but you're always going to be in a flight of 2, 3, 4 other airplanes. And then later on, it gets a lot more complex when you're in a big strike package. So yes, you're in your own bubble, but you're very connected in a very dynamic environment. And it dawned on me like much later in flight school, like when I was getting like even into F-18 training, I realized like I could learn things much quicker than when I started flight school. Like one day I was going through my stuff and I took out a flight syllabus when you're like one of your very first flights, when like, this is how you strap it. This is how, you know, like one of those very beginning. And I looked at the syllabus, there's like 8 items on there. And I thought to myself, how did I ever struggle with this? This is like so easy. And of course it was challenging because you hadn't done that before, but it dawned on me, learning is a skill, and I am much better at learning having gone through this intensive training. And I'm absolutely certain that is the same for dentists at the end of dental school, at that high level and intense educational process. You probably learn, retain, and assimilate what's happening much quicker towards the end of that process. So to answer your question, how you put all that together, it takes time. And when you're a fresh young wingman, we'll say freshly out of dental school, maybe, you know, brand new dentist, same thing with brand new fighter pilot. I remember being on some flights, a 4 ship, and I'm maybe -2 or -4 hanging on to my flight lead. There's things happening. I can hear it on the radio. I need to just stay in position so I'm predictable for my flight lead. But we get done with a flight, and I really didn't know everything that happened, like far from it. Yeah. And just over time, as you get better at what you do and you become that master of your craft, you just pick it up more. You're just more aware. The other thing I'll mention, and this is relevant a bit to what we do, is in that line of work, before you go on a mission, you'll spend two, sometimes three times as long briefing as you will actually flying.
Mm.
And if it's a complex, say we're in the Persian Gulf and we're going into Iraq, that's going to be a very long brief. And you're going to have a mass brief, then you're going to have an individual flight element brief, and then you're going to have the intel brief. You're going to be having to digest a lot of information. And back in the day, they probably have iPads and electronic stuff now that we didn't have back then. It was all paper. So, you know, in about 3-4 hours, I'm going to be in the cockpit, possibly at night, and all this stuff everybody's been talking about, I'm going to have a small kneeboard card where I have my notes, and that's what I'm going to have to go to try and remember what I've been listening to for the last 2 to 3 hours. So you get very good at sort of cutting through the noise, pulling out the pertinent data that you know you're going to need, putting it where you can access it, and then using that when you're in your mission. And that is how I approach our deliverables with our doctors, is there's a lot of noise and I try to pull out the relevant, like, know this, you've got 5 minutes to look at this report. If you know these 6 things, you're going to feel very confident that you know how your practice is doing, as an example.
You've given me the wonderful segue into a question that I had in my notes here ready to ask you. And it's about being mission focused and knowing what data is appropriate for that mission. So clearly you've done that in multiple contexts. You've done it in your aviation career, you've done it in your accounting career, and you've also helped other people become, I guess, aware of their own mission, but what data they need to be paying attention to so that they can achieve those outcomes. In the work that you do with dentists, and just transitioning into that accounting space for a moment, where do you see the key and critical data points lying within the dental practice from your perspective, from a CPA's perspective?
The data is in, so if I put my CPA hat on, the data is in the dollars moving. Okay, so every dollar that moves in and out of that practice, when we do the accounting, we're going to organize that into the income statement or profit and loss and the balance sheet. And that's going to be the same whether you're in Australia, America, UK. It is the same accounting principles. So the financial statements are where that data is going to be organized. Now, that is in the US in particular. I'm not quite sure how it is for the Australian listeners, but a lot of tax practitioners are more tax oriented. And so they're primarily supporting the doctors doing a tax return at year end. I believe you should use that financial data during the year to help guide your practice, make informed decisions, and make as much money as you can in the practice. So within those financial statements, if somebody's not a regular user of that financial data, they will gravitate towards the income statement or the profit and loss, the same thing, because it's easy to read. It's revenue, less expenses is my net income. This is what my accountant told me I made. So that's the go-to place for, I think, a lot of dentists, if they're looking at their accounting, like, where do I find this information? I think you really have to take it beyond that, because all that will tell you is you collected this amount of dollars and you paid these expenses. Not to get too much on a tangent into accounting principles, but there's 3 major cash flows that will affect your practice that are not on that income statement, and that is on the balance sheet, your assets. Did you just buy a new CBCT, you know, for example? Like, that's not going on the P&L. That's going to be a fixed asset. Did you pay on a loan that you took out to buy the practice? That's a big cash flow. Most of that's going to be on the balance sheet. And finally, why do we own businesses? You know, we own businesses to take home profit, and that's our profit distributions also on the balance sheet. So I think if you just handed a formal set of financial statements to a doctor with no other explanation, they're going to get maybe half the picture. They're not going to really understand that balance sheet. So my goal is to pull out what you need and kind of show it in one place. Now we take it even further, because also to answer your question, where does that data reside? Well, it's in the practice management software as well.
Yeah.
And I don't get, as the accountant, I don't get too far into that practice management software but you have to understand, like, when we're looking at financial data, the question, and I can't tell you, Jesse, like how many conversations I've had where I'll explain like where the practice is and how they're doing. And the ultimate conclusion is you're doing great. You've got an above average profit margin. And that's all, like, I'm not sure they listened to anything else I said, but I said, you know, your profit margin's above average.
Yep.
And everything looks great and you're doing a great job. And it's like, oh, thank you. Like, that's awesome. That's all I wanted to know. So with that in mind, right, that's what we're trying to obtain, I think, from the financial data, and it's profit. Like, is everything okay?
Yeah.
Well, if everything's okay, awesome. As I like to say, there's no such thing as too much profit. There's definitely such thing as not enough profit. And if profit is low, we want to have an answer. And I think this is where it pays some dividends if you have an accountant that knows what they're doing within the dental space, because then they can help diagnose, identify if the profit's acceptable or not, given the size of the practice, the composition of the practice in terms of doctors, or, you know, is it solo doc versus partner versus are there associate doctors participating? All those have major impacts on what is a acceptable profit margin. So where I'm going with this, with the practice software, is that will tell you how much money is outstanding and how old it is. And we call that, you know, accounts receivables and the aging of the receivables. Now, in the United States, all of their dental practices, most small businesses, they pay taxes on what's called a pass-through basis, right? The practice earns profit that flows through and you pay tax individually. And that's on a cash basis. So most CPAs they don't even know what Dentrix is. They've never heard Open Dental. They don't even, like, they don't care. They don't care what your AR is, because it doesn't affect your taxes. We ask to see the accounts receivable and the monthly production and collection every month from the practice software.
Yeah.
Because I want to know if a practice is collecting money. Because 100%. if the profit margin's low and the doctor's telling me, Morgan, I feel like I'm working really hard, but the cash just isn't there. And like, how can this be? We can look at the expenses. You know, are you overspending? Do we need to lighten up there? Or I think more often than not, I'll look at the accounts receivable and have some real issues. And the problem is you're under collecting. You're not collecting money.
Quick question for you, because I'm curious to ask about the United States experience particularly. Is accounts receivable a big issue there, in the sense that doctors running lots of accounts? Is that a lot of how they're billing?
It's the dental insurance. Like, if there's insurance, they have to bill and then wait to get paid.
Paid, yeah. Okay.
Or depending on their payment policy with their patients, they may, hopefully they collect at the time of service, or if they send out bills. And what can happen is, if they're going to bill insurance, that has to happen. And you'd be shocked to hear the stories I've heard where it doesn't happen. Like, it slipped through the cracks and it never got sent in, or it was sent in incorrectly.
Yeah.
Or I've heard this too. Somebody buys a practice in a smaller town, and so all the employees, they hire them into the new entity they have for their dental practice. Mm-hmm. And the front desk person's been there forever, knows all the people and feels sorry for them and doesn't make them pay.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard that.
Yep.
So a number of challenges can contribute to collections coming up short.
Mm. There's a lot of things I'd like to ask you about. I could probably talk to you for 3 days, but I wanted to ask you about risk as well, because I think risk is an important part of business management. And obviously, going back to your background flying, and now, of course, with your current work in accounting, risk management, risk identification, risk mitigation in business is really, really important. What mistakes do you see practice owners making? And again, what did you learn from your flying days that you think is applicable to identifying risk, managing risk, and then, of course, you know, mitigating that risk?
Yeah. So, yeah, risk definitely, like, hold different meaning after the Navy.
Yeah, totally.
I remember...
risk could be death, really, literally.
I remember... the CPA exam, it's pretty tough. I mean, it's not fun. It took me 18 months. I mean, it's not something you really want to go through. But if you don't have to, but I remember it was a study group and some younger, I mean, I was the old guy. There were some young people like almost in tears just because it was just from the stress. And I didn't say this, but in my head, I was, you know, death is not on the table here. Like, you know, like, let's just study a little harder. So like risk for me means, because it was, the Navy was very stressful and risk, operational risk management was huge. We talked about all the time, like, do we really need to be taking this risk? You know, sometimes the answer is yes. And so there's certainly a times of high risk, a high stress. And in business, like that element goes away. So in some ways I thought in business, it's much less stress, but the reality is financial stress can be just as bad as getting launched off the end of the carrier at night. Sometimes, you know, it can really, so, you know, that my take on risk is that if we're going to think about it in terms of owning a business, you know, what are the causes of risk? You know, it could be over leveraged or just fail at business because we just can't get patients in, or we can get them in, we can't keep them. I think that's where, at least kind of top of mind, just considering your question, that's where I think the risk level is. It's a it's a fabulous industry. Like, failures are very rare.
Yes.
It is a wonderful, wonderful industry. If you have listeners in dental school, that they've chosen a fantastic path. But where I think you have to manage risk is, aside from just getting the practice going and undertaking all those challenges like we've been talking about with owning the business, there's going to become a time where you're going to grow, you're going to enjoy some success, the practice is going to be doing great, and now you're going to ask yourself, what's the next steps?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to keep going. And there's a couple different ways to keep going. Where I've seen, to kind of hone in on your question of risk and what comes to my mind as I think about this, I think there are some people that believe that to be successful, to be an entrepreneur, and to be, I would consider like a major player in their market, that you have to have multiple practices.
Yeah.
And I think that is very risky. And I've seen that, and not that it can't be done profitably and successfully, but it can also be done poorly. Badly, yeah. And I always hate to see it, but if somebody jumps out to practice number two before they have practice number one completely dialed in to where it can live without them, to where they're wearing more of the CEO hat than the clinician hat, then the doctor ends up with a lot of debt, straddling two practices that are underperforming. They're working twice as hard for the same or less money than the doctor that has the totally dialed in solo doc practice. So I think the risk where I have some of those conversations where we consider, you know, what could prevent you from getting where you want to go in business. It's not always like, should I own a practice or how do I run it? It is, you know, once they've enjoyed some real success, it's like, what do we do now?
It's a really good question. And I'm probably going to get a little bit philosophical around this for a moment, because we see the multi-practice trend here as well. And I know some people that do it well, and I've seen other people do it really very badly. And as you say, working twice as hard for less money is something I've seen a lot of those people go through. Not everyone, granted.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got some clients that do it really well. But to your point, I think this is a really key point. So for anyone listening to this who might aspire to multi-practice ownership, the key point that I think I'd like to just underline and put in bold type would be, you've got to get that first one dialed in really, really well so that it operates without you before you start trying to spin too many plates.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like, yeah, and by dialed in, I think in terms of, if I just picture like the wet rag, you want to wring every dollar of, like, you just cannot wring any more profit out of this practice. There's just nowhere else to go. There's no more space. I can't put in any more ops. There's no more hours. Like, okay, let's get this where it can live without me, then go start. A close friend of mine, incidentally, my dentist as well, been a client for 11 years. That's what he did.
Yeah.
And he enjoys a tremendous amount of success with two practices.
Yeah.
Two big practices.
And I think that's another key thing, two big practices versus two small practices, because in smaller practices, you don't get the same degree of leverage because mm-hmm. this is not enough chairs to generate enough revenue to cover the fixed overheads that can be depending on the productivity from those chairs. But when you've got more chairs under one roof, you've got a bit more leverage in there. So can you just speak for a moment, like if you're going to go down the multiple practice path, do mm-hmm. you see a difference between two large practices versus two small practices?
I think, let me say first, our firm supports just over 500 practices coast mm-hmm. to coast in the US. So in a way, I'm looking through the soda straw because I know there's a whole heck of a lot of more practices than 500 across the country. So I know I'm familiar with those dentists that I work with, but I think it's a very good sample. I think it's a yeah. very good sample because it's across 50 states and it's yeah. all the same type of folks. Our highest earning clients, and if I were to define success isn't always just dollars. It's no. quality of life too.
100%.
So if I were to say our most successful doctors, just in terms of high income and a high quality of life, and I'm not bashful about saying this, there's a common thread and they have one large practice. Really well-run,
yes,
like fabulous practice.
I feel like coming out with an amen just for that now.
Yes. Yes. And it's true. So multi-practice, and that's a really interesting point you brought up. I think certainly of the multi-practice clients I'm familiar with, there is a large practice and a smaller, maybe perhaps growing satellite practice. Mm. We have a client comes to mind in Michigan. It's a father-son team, kind of like me. I run HC County firm and own it with my dad and Courtney. But they've been very successful at acquiring practices. Mm. They're up to three. And I was just talking to them the other day about maybe buying a specialty office. They're doing it correct because they've also sold equity to like superstar associates to yeah. make sure they've got some stakeholders on site taking yeah. care of things. So to answer your question, I think there's usually a main, if it's done correctly, there's a big practice, maybe a smaller practice and growing. The failures I've seen with multi-practice is where they try and do it too early. And yes. so you end up with,
yes.
and I've seen as many as four and five. They'll go and have these four and five little practices and they're all just barely scraping by. And it's really heartbreaking.
I have seen that exact same picture too. And I would agree with everything you say. I've got some clients that have done the multi-practice work really well, mm-hmm. but it was staged. It was considered. Yep. It was, as you say, everything was dialed in before they went on to the next one. And I think one of the, I like metaphors a lot, but for me, going from one to two practices before the first one is fully dialed in, it's like driving your car and trying to take off from the traffic lights in fourth gear. The whole right. thing labors, right? There's just right. not enough right. revs in the engine to get the thing going. Mm-hmm. And so it just feels like there's too much weight on it. And I agree with you. I wanted to just take a moment to also ask you a little bit about, just coming back to what you spoke about earlier, and again, recording this in 2021, you started your business in 2008, 2009, when the global financial crisis or the mm-hmm. Great Recession, whichever name you give it, began. And so I've got some gray hair. I've got a few wrinkles. So I've been through a couple of economic cycles now. In Australia, we had the recession of the 1990s. We had the dot-com boom mm-hmm. and bust. We've had the GFC. We've had this COVID thing. And so you start to see that history doesn't repeat itself, as Mark Twain says, but it does rhyme somewhat and mm-hmm. you see things. I wanted to ask you about playing too defensively in business. Seasons change. We're just coming out of winter into spring here. You're coming out of mm-hmm. summer and into autumn or fall over there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've noticed, and I don't know if this translates to accounting or exactly, but I'd love to get your perspective on it because you deal with so many doctors, is that sometimes when you're going through a tough time, there is a place to use a sporting metaphor, to play some defense,
mm-hmm.
but you can't win by trying not to lose. So mm-hmm. what's your advice to practice owners about knowing when to set sail into the ocean again. When do you kind of batten down the hatches, going back to Navy metaphors, and then when do you kind of go out into the ocean again? Do you have any thoughts around just the psychology around winning, the psychology about knowing how to deal with tumultuous times and not staying in the cave too long before you step out into the sun again?
Yeah, you know, I think I've got some examples come to mind, and I'll reference this latest one we've been through. Mid-March in the state of Colorado, we were shut down. We were told to go home.
Yep.
Our clients were being shut down, and the dentists can work from, they cannot work from home. No. So it was very scary time. Within 2 weeks, we had a staff about 30. I never would have believed like work from home would ever work, but we figured it out in 2 weeks because we had to.
Yep.
And it was a very scary time for our doctors, I mean, all around. And I guess I, at that time, just for me personally, it was just keep doing what you're good at. And an analogy, I remember there was one, you don't remember all the flights you have in the Navy, but there's a few I remember really, really well. And I remember my first really, my first night of extraordinarily bad weather flying at night at the carrier, and it was the middle Pacific. There's nowhere else to go.
And it's rolling.
The deck's pitching, the weather's crappy.
Yep.
It's pitch black and there's nowhere. You're either going to land on the carrier or you're probably not going to see sunrise. And so I'm sitting and going through the clouds. Everyone's getting low on gas. So stressful. And I just had this moment of just sheer terror. I was like, this is happening like now. And it lasted a good, maybe 2 full seconds. And I just said, enough, just get on the instruments, do what you know how to do, and we'll figure it out. And we did. And I still remember that. It was a very scary night. And so I didn't, when COVID hit, you had those butterflies like, oh my God, like what's going to happen? And so I just do what we do well. And I, you know, I started pumping out content, the kneeboard card to all our clients. Like this is all noise. There were all kinds of relief programs coming out in the States, kind of keeping people up on that. And so it ended up being a very rewarding experience, kind of helping the clients through that. That was sort of my personal experience through there. And I think for the doctors, more than one of our clients, and I don't want to say it was a bunch, but it's definitely maybe a dozen or so. They went into opportunity mode, and because there were practices, they were failing. And I think the only ones that failed were ones that really weren't doing that great beforehand.
Yes.
And COVID, it was just sort of the final straw.
Yep.
And so many of our clients went into growth mode and said, you know, I can pick up this either shell of a practice that's already built out. I can just pick it up for pennies on the dollar, or I can just take it off the dentist's hands for very reasonable prices. And so we did have clients that actually grew during that time. And I don't know if that answers your question or not, the kind of the psychology. I think most people overall, I think did what I described. It's just, you know, just do what you're good at. Keep going. And then for those very entrepreneurial ones, you know, they identified opportunities and went shopping.
I think your analogy of landing the plane on the deck, actually, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you about the pitching deck, because I think it's actually a really important insight. And you said you had, after that 2 seconds of terror, you got on the instruments, you got the data. And I think one of the things that I've experienced working with lots of dentists as well is the data is what guides you. The data helps you navigate your course and get you to land the plane safely, again, to continue the metaphor. And it's easy to get caught up in the emotional tailspin of everything. But I think if we can come back to the data, the numbers, what were the dashboards, your kneeboard card that you've obviously used and created, and we use a dashboard system for our practices, being able to see that is what helps you, you know, navigate your path to safety. I'm curious to ask you, given the work you do with dentists, and I know it's 500 clients, so that's quite an extensive portfolio of practices. Just as we start to think about wrapping up, I'd like to ask you 2 pertinent questions. If you could tap doctors on the shoulder, practice owners on the shoulder, and just whisper a little bit of advice in their ear. If you could be in their earphones, like the control tower was in your ears navigating the plane, if you were trying to give them advice to help them navigate, what would be a couple of key things you'd say in terms of advice?
That's a really good question. And I'll try and think of some recent conversations. The advice I had, if I just were to, like you said, sort of tap on their shoulder and share something with them that I thought could help them out, I would say, you know, from just the accounting perspective, from their friendly accountant, I think most people think that if they're missing out on profit, like, you know, because sometimes the fear is, what am I missing, or what do I not know? A lot of times, if somebody's thinking, well, maybe I'm not realizing the profit that I could earn, the default assumption and the question I get all the time is, well, where could I be overspending? How can I control costs? And I think that is certainly something to pay attention to. But I think more often than not, the issue is they're, and I mentioned this earlier because it's a big topic, they're not collecting money. Administratively, there is no more important task than collecting money. Otherwise, why bother? So I'd say their friendly CPA would tap them on the shoulder and say, make sure you're looking at your accounts receivable weekly. And if receivables are sliding into over 2 months, like, deal with it now. And you might find that you might be shocked where that takes you in your practice on things you might need to fix that you didn't know were broken. So that's one thing. And that's a pretty specific, but just to share with you, most of the time when I'm trying to help somebody with a profit margin where they're struggling, I mean, that's
where the big gains are.
Very, very common. The other thing, and I do, I switch hats. You know, sometimes I have my CPA hat on. Sometimes it's just my business leadership hat on. You know, I've owned a company for a long time too. I have 30 employees. And now that we're, you know, after COVID and we're working all across the country, they're across seven states now. We have employees all over. Mm. So I would just, you have to be cognizant that leadership is a totally separate skill. And just because, and I have some gray hairs too, but just because you have some gray hairs and been around the block, that does not equate to leadership skills. You have to work on it. You have to be cognizant of it. And whether you want that role or not, it doesn't matter. You own that practice. You're the business leader. Sometimes say everything's your problem, you know, whether you want it or not. And so I would encourage, if I were to tap them on the shoulder, like you say, I would suggest pay attention, like nurture and develop that skill, that leadership skill. Give it some time and some thought, and because the practices that make a lot of money and have that high level of success, and I don't always want to kind of reference money, but it's important. I'm going to count, we count the money, but it's money and quality of life. The practices that enjoy that high level of success, money and quality of life, I know from just having known these doctors for a long time, I know they're good business. They've got the full package. Like they're amazing clinicians, but they're also they're really good business leaders, and their staff look up to them. The patients look up to them. Like they've got that whole package. So I would say pay close attention to that leadership role. It's a separate skill set, and make sure you approach it that way.
Morgan, we've covered a lot of ground today. And for those people listening to our podcast, I know that there'll be a lot of people very curious to learn more about what you do in the dental space from the accounting point of view. I'd like to just mention that for those people listening, head across to hdagroupdental.com, which is the website that Morgan operates and is part of the HDA Accounting Group. There's lots of things on that website, lots of resources, lots of things to read, lots of things to check out. But I think for every business owner, I think you've got to have a board of advisors, and on that board of advisors, you need to have your accountant, and they're really pivotal. I know in my world, we have boards of advisors, and obviously, you know, Morgan's advising 500 dentists or more. And so that industry insight's really helpful and really specific. So I'd encourage every single person here to reach out, head across to hdagroupdental.com and check out the website and reach out to Morgan for some help if that's appropriate for you. Morgan, one last question, And I'd really just like to, before I ask this question, say thank you for taking the time to come talk to us. And thank you for not just sharing your accounting experience, because I think that's really, really valuable in itself. But it's also really good to get the context of your background and how it led you there, because I think that's a really unique and interesting, deeply interesting story.
Yeah, it's I've enjoyed it. We had a really good discussion. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I wanted to ask you one last question, if I can. And that is, it's a funny question. It might seem like an irrelevant question, but I'll try and put some context to it for you. If you were having a barbecue and you could invite half a dozen or thereabouts people, and it's a business-based barbecue, of course. Okay. It's a working lunch barbecue. Who would be the three or four or five or six, however many people you think, that you'd most like to talk to, and what would you like to learn?
You're talking like in general, like types of people or actual people?
Actual people.
Actual people. Number one, I mean, I don't have to think about the Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Imagine having a barbecue with him. Like I enjoy watching YouTube and I watch his interviews and he's brilliant.
Yeah.
And the thing I like about Elon is it's hard to quantify everything I admire so much, but he empowers like smart people to do their thing.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
something I aspire to. Like I have a really good business partner, Courtney. She knows so much more about tax than I will ever know. Yeah. Like I want to see her go. Like Lauren, our accounting manager, she's a CPA, former auditor. She's a better accountant than me, no question. And I want to nurture her so she can grow and do her thing. And I think Elon just a master of that. I would love to know kind of how he's unlocked that. He runs what, four or five different just amazing companies. And it's not because he's there every day. He has empowered amazing people to be on the same team and do that. I would love to pick his brain over a beer and a cheeseburger on the barbecue. So him for sure. Gosh, who else would I want to pick their brain?
Doesn't have to be anyone else. If Elon Musk is top of the pops,
maybe he's top of the list. The other thing I'll mention though, I'm sure you'll agree with me. Like I've had the opportunity for, you know, paths to cross smart people. Mm-hmm. And whether they're in accounting or not, doing yeah. something else. And I find that there's just something about being with somebody who's really good at what they do, having a conversation and pick up some bits and pieces. And as an example, before COVID, my wife and I, we like to do the cruises. So mm-hmm. we're on a cruise, having a drink at the hot tub. And there's a German couple right about my age. And I get talking to him. Turns out, he's a pilot. I still fly. I have a small plane. So we have the same type of small plane. We start talking. He owns a marketing company in Germany. Mm. It's a bigger company than mine.
Yeah.
He's been very successful. And we got talking business. And it was just something about just being able to sit and talk with somebody that's kind of faced similar challenges, talked about the challenges they've overcome, how he approaches developing his team. While certainly talking business was not quite what I had in mind when I headed up the pool deck to have a couple of drinks, it was like it was a really fascinating afternoon. So that's who I would want. If I was having that barbecue, I don't care what industry they're in. If they're at the top of their game and they've got some unique ways of where they've achieved that success, there's just nothing like being around like a smaller, big group of people like that.
Well, I think that is absolutely fascinating. It speaks to lots of different things. It speaks to the ability to grow teams, empower people to get out of the way. That's the lifestyle piece we spoke about, one of the metrics of success. And one of the other things is about learning from other people, other industries. And really candidly, that's basically the premise of our podcast is we look to other industries and other experiences mm-hmm. to draw the lessons out that we can give to our dental practice owners listening to the show. So, Morgan, you've been really very generous today, and I'm deeply appreciative of the time you've taken to come and talk to us. Ladies and gents, once again, head across to hdagroupdental.com, check out all the resources there, reach out to Morgan, and Morgan, I hope we get to see you down under at some point soon.
Yeah, our very close friends in Perth, we owe them a trip because they've been to see us, so we can't do it now, but when travel opens up again.
When travel does open.
Right.
Fingers crossed that sometime soon.
All right. Well, listen, right. Jesse, I really, really appreciate it. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it too.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.